KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Holla. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unions segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Retirees Union and the president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Tonight, I'm joined by my sister in the struggle.
Good evening. This is Deborah Hall, and I am a new retiree member of the American Federation of Teachers of Oregon, or American Federation of Teachers, and also the current Secretary-Treasurer for the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Good evening.
Tonight, our guest is Sherman Henry, who works for the University of Oregon. Welcome back, Brother Henry.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So before we get started with our session tonight, I'd like to thank you for the consistency that you've demonstrated and highlighting the needs to discuss the importance of black workers here in Oregon.
Sure, not a problem.
Okay, so let's get it on.
Yeah.
So I understand you have a new program coming up.
Yes, this month we're celebrating Labor Black History, and this year's speaker will be April Sims. We're only going to have one program, which will be in Eugene on the campus at the Lily Reynolds Parker Black Cultural Center. And the topic is intersectionality in the intergenerational labor movement.
Okay. How can people find out about that?
Well, they can go on our website, which is Oregon Labor Education Research Center, and pull the flyer down. And if they decide to attend, the event is free to the first 50 people because the capacity this year is a little smaller.
Okay. What time?
The time would be from 3 to 5:30. 3 to 5.
3 to 5. Well, okay. So you and Sister Sims go back a ways.
Well, I met Sister Sims since I've been out here in Oregon. And she's the newly elected Secretary-Treasurer of the Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The first person of color and woman in that position. And she took over January 2019. And she's also a long-term activist and a native of Washington.
Okay, yeah, I understand she's also a CBTU sister.
Yes, she's also a Coalition of Black Trade Unionists member.
You're right. So how did you come up with the title?
Well, we both, April and I, discussed the needs of what's happening right now in the workforce. And as America deal with the minority-majority population, we thought it was important to talk about the intersectionalities and the whole diversity and inclusion and equity that we're now doing more research on in the labor movement, mm-hmm. as we try to kind of think about the next generation and their ability to earn a decent wage, benefits, retirement, etc. So as we kind of think about the different intersections, LGBTQ community, people of color, women, and young folk, at the center of our discussion is really social justice and how it's evolving in this next generation.
So how are we to know when we have reached success?
I don't know that we would know because one, as you know, the framework that I deal with is through critical race. So there's a history mm-hmm. of injustice and mm-hmm. stagnation, and we look at discrimination and racism as a permanent reality for people of color and other marginalized groups. And so success, I guess, on one hand, would be if we have a society that allows all of us to have a sense of belonging and purpose without any of the historical disparities in treatment.
Okay. And also, Sherman, in the past, in past conversations and workshops, and as you've mentioned here, something called critical race theory. Can you explain to our listeners just some basics of that concept?
Well, the basic is we acknowledge that there's a need for intervention and activism around the historical racial disparities, gender disparities, and social identities. So at the center of it is challenging status quo.
Okay.
And so we do challenge status quo. And the dominant ideology about you can have a color neutral policy, because the statistics show that in most cases, people of color, women, LGBTQ folks are treated differently than dominant groups that has been known to kind of take leadership. And so because the civil rights movement had been stagnated, mm-hmm. we now go in and we do a lot more research about social justice. And the goal is to eliminate all forms of subordination of people. And through this process, we listen to stories, because stories have meaning. Stories provide us a different knowledge from people's individual lived experiences, and sometimes it's group experiences. And I myself, especially out here in Oregon, because I do a lot of diversity equity work now, I'm learning a lot about the various populations we have not necessarily thought about their marginalization here.
Right.
Particularly now at the university, we have the whole phenomenon of international students. So I learned sure. about 2 weeks ago about their plight. And so we, meaning those of us who do this work, we look at the historical inaccuracies of and assumptions based on race, gender, it's centered, and we kind of look at what are the contemporary challenges that we have as a global society. And so through that process, we look at these variables, and we apply what would social justice mean for this group. How would all of us, you know, black, white, and others, create a sense of belonging through these variables and social identities?
Okay, thank you.
So that doesn't sound like an overnight problem.
No, this is since the beginning of time, right? You know, the whole civil rights movement now, and in the past, egregious slavery, things of that nature, it has evolved in different ways. And this new conversation that America is having about make it great again mm-hmm. Has created more tension with progress among racialized groups.
Wow. Well, I mean, I understand the value. I understand the need. But I also understand that folks get burned out, you know, when they have tried and tried and they don't feel as though they're being taken seriously. Now, I think you are on a wonderful path of pointing out the problems and trying to create the solutions. But like I said, it doesn't seem like there's an overnight solution to this.
No, well, it's a conversation long before me, right? We still dealing with equal pay for women.
Sure. Yeah.
We're still dealing with job access and promotional opportunities. We're still dealing with pipeline challenges for people of color and women up the corporate ladder, if you would. And so it's a deeper analysis of the barriers that create the injustices that folks face on a day-to-day basis. So it's an everyday occurrence. And so those of us who seek social justice, inclusion, equity, mm-hmm. it's a lifetime of activism.
Well, and what I know of Sister Sims, She definitely has the enthusiasm to help address this issue. I know she's doing some wonderful things in the state of Washington that are very similar to what you're talking about also.
Sure. And part of what we're trying to create is the lens to look at collective bargaining in this process to kind of re-evaluate how workers are treated and those who are suffering similar challenges as they 50 years ago.
Right? Sure. Okay.
And so access to health care is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The health care disparities is a challenge. So through collective bargaining, because unions are facing some historical challenges with law, there's more employer anti-union campaigns occurring.
Sure.
And at the same token, you're seeing a increase in people of color joining unions.
Right.
So now you have this whole conversation about Janus and let's get out of the union. You know, so I think developing critical race lens around these social justice issues from a workers' right perspective is evolving through these conversations.
That's nice. You know, and if history tells us anything where labor unions are involved, I think this is an excellent place, you know, for us, and something that if we really decide to as labor, we can, you know, significantly, you know, start turning the tide and including more people, because we all have to work. No matter what your color, where you live, whatever, we all have to work. And so there's our commonality right there, and is a should be, in my mind, a good jumping off point. But it seems to kind of get kind of distracted from there, I guess.
Yeah, and as we kind of think about this in political economic terms, you know there's a increase in wealth gap. And so part of our analysis and our basis for having these conversations is to look at what has happened to the historical belief of the middle class.
Right, okay.
And so as we now think in terms of upward mobility and a consistent struggle through law, public policies, and organizational leadership, right, that sets the tone a lot of times about population and what workers' right would include.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we kind of think about the shift in the population, we now want to look at the historical injustice against certain populations of people.
Right.
So in order to do this, folks have got to be in the room. Folks have got to step up. I know you indicated that more blacks are joining unions, but it's not just a matter of joining. You really have to engage yourself in order to help make some of these changes take place.
Sure, and when we think in terms of people of color, there's a diverse group, right? Asian, Latinx, et cetera.
Right.
That's now starting to, because we are in a global community, mm-hmm. Seek gainful employment here. Mm-hmm. And at the same token, you're now seeing full-time jobs now being converted to part-time jobs with no benefits,
right?
Things of that nature. So the critique or an analysis is also, what does the new challenge for workers' right entail? And so now folks who were used to earning 40 hours a week are now working 35 hours a week or 30 hours a week with no benefits. So as we continue to kind of fight the good fight, as they say.
Sure.
We have to also bring in the next generation into this conversation, because they didn't grow up oftentimes with the realities of separate restrooms and prohibition against the water fountain and things of that nature. So they don't always understand it from a 50-year perspective.
Gotcha.
50-year past perspective. So now they have a different challenge.
Yeah. So for our listeners who've just joined in, you are listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Our guest this evening is Sherman Henry. He works for the University of Oregon, and we are talking a a little bit about critical race theory, we're talking about the intersectionality of the workforce and the need for there to be more inclusion. Is that about right, Brother Henry?
Yes, more inclusion is definitely at the heart of what we're pushing now and advocating for, based on generations, race, gender, and other social identities.
Okay. So we talked a little bit in the earlier about critical race theory, and we talked a little bit about intersectionality. Intersectionality and intergenerational labor movement. Where do those two coincide?
Well, we believe race, gender, all interacts, right? So these various forms of oppression, who we represent or what we represent in our lived experiences, they overlap. So mm-hmm. you're not just dealing with one, you're dealing with a combination of things happening all at once.
Sure.
Because it's the lived experience from the individual and in some cases the group. So we want to kind of get into looking at how groups are marginalized.
So since you've been here, and so am I understanding that you've come to Oregon from Florida?
Yes.
And so can you maybe discuss briefly maybe some differences that you see in the intersection, I guess, of race, what you're looking at labor-wise here compared to in the southern states, in the East Coast, to kind of get an idea of what are we up against here? I guess what I'm trying to say is that we look at Oregon as a very progressive place, but when you start kind of moving the tiles around and looking, it's not always as it appears on the outset, on the surface.
Well, I think the challenge that we all have is that the history of America has not been gentle and inclusive. And so whether it's Portland, Miami, Seattle, New York, there's a shift going on in the population that is causing panic for certain people in power. And so the Oregon experience is different, but by the same token, it's also normal. For groups who've been denied equal access to fight for justice. So folks here are also fighting a similar fight that we experienced in Miami.
Okay.
The population is a bit different, right? The demographic is a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
However, the overlapping issues are the same because it's an American issue.
Okay.
So do I understand you to say it's the same problem, but we may have to develop a different solution?
Well, that's one way to think about it. I think here, for an example, one of the things that I find exciting is the recent Student Success Act,
mm-hmm.
and how it calls for equity among students, parents, et cetera, teachers, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
And we had similar challenges in Florida with education. And so when you think about one of the inequities in America is our education system, from
mm-hmm.
Brown
sure.
Versus Board of Education to now.
Sure.
In most research, it shows a consistent pattern of students of color not achieving the same as white students. And so right now, the red for ed and bargaining for the common good seems to be becoming front page
mm-hmm.
News, because now we're trying to galvanize nationally
mm-hmm.
a conversation about public education.
Right.
And looking at all of these alternative charter schools are not necessarily benefiting students of color.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely are not benefiting teachers, because the term and conditions and the working conditions are worse.
Sure.
The pay is worse. So when we kind of look at overhauling the system, we have to kind of center social justice lenses to kind of promote the kind of inclusion and the equity that we need. And I find that challenge here exciting on one hand, because you all, meaning Oregon, just passed the Student Success Act.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the march here for Red for Ed, and you're now starting to see this phenomenon occur throughout the country.
Right.
And so this is a really good time to kind of talk about education and equity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, Reverend Barber.
Yes.
Has highlighted the Poor People's Campaign.
Yes.
So how does that fit into what we're talking about tonight?
I just think.
Or does it?
Well, it's a combination of strategies to call attention to the injustices.
Okay.
And so whether it's pay equity for women, immigration policies, public education and access,
mm-hmm.
Health care, right? Because part of this whole conversation, when we think about health care, is this whole attack on Obamacare, quote unquote.
Sure.
And so what's fueling these groups to be for something, motivating groups to be for something, and the resistance that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when we process this information and look for social justice, it's a range of issues that we're fighting.
Okay.
And so different groups take up different portions of the fight.
Okay. But we're all moving in the same direction.
That's the goal. Yes. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is good, because if you look at it from a worker standpoint, as workers, we're all going through a certain portion of this, regardless of how we look or what our address is. And so, for me, it's hard for us not to be able to get together on those common issues and seek solutions together.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the process of inclusion has to occur, because we don't want folks to believe just because one group no longer has the kind of oppression and they're at the table, that it eliminates other groups who've been at the table. We're saying that if we think in terms of a shared interest, mm-hmm. all of us will benefit, and there's room at the table. You just have to get more chairs,
right.
and expand the length of the table. And so for me, thinking in terms of the political economy and the wage gap, you know, the wealth gap, that has to be something that we take up. And so when I think about the current Poor People's Campaign,
mm-hmm.
That you mentioned, Sister Tina, it's all interconnected.
Okay. So it's my impression that you have given training to various unions here in Oregon. Do you find them very receptive to the message?
Yes. Yes. Again, you know, as we kind of think in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're all stakeholders in creating the kind of culture and a climate that we all have a sense of belonging and feel safe in. And so, yeah, folks here are being introduced to new information,
mm-hmm.
but it's been well received so far by
okay.
the groups that I've been engaging
okay.
through.
That's promising.
Yeah, the University of Oregon and the labor movement.
Okay. Do you want to remind our members of the program that's going to take place?
Well, it's the Labor Black History, again, February the 20th, from 3 to 5 at the University of Oregon, Lily Reynolds Parker Black Culture Center in Eugene.
Okay. What's the cost?
It's free. it's free.
Free is a very nice word.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't think at this point I have anything to add. I'm glad that we're continuing to move forward and have these conversations, that more people and entities and organizations want to get involved and be able to share out that information and share it with their folks and get more people on board. Because it's going to take all of us. We didn't, you know, not one group got us here and not one group is going to get us out.
Sure. And we're creating a sense of consciousness among all the groups. Mm-hmm. And bringing folks together is always the key to kind of seeking social justice and reform, if you would. And so, again, we don't want folks to feel excluded, or folks who have something believing they're going to lose it just because other folks are now at the table.
Right.
I think we're creating the kind of society that Dr. King and others were seeking.
So last week I was in Florida at a Coalition of Black Trade Unionists meeting. And at our meeting, a report was distributed to us. It's called The Future of Work, And this is a report that was drafted by the International AFL-CIO. And so the nature of the report talks about constituency groups. And so once we go through it and get the general breath of what it's telling us, we're going to have you come back so you can help us digest exactly what's taking place in the labor workforce.
Sure, not a problem.
Okay.
I think that's it for me.
Okay. So before we sign off, I would like to remind our listeners that there is a Blacks in Government dinner. It is scheduled for February 7th, 2020, and it's at the Graduate Eugene Hotel in Eugene, Oregon. The social hour is 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., and the banquet goes from 7 p.m. to 8:30, and this is an annual event that takes place. Sister Linda Hamilton is the president of BIG, and you always leave, every time I've gone to those, I've always left unwanting. The dialogue has always been very titillating and very promising, and so if you happen to be free on February 7th, you might want to find yourself on your way to Eugene. So our monthly Coalition of Black Trade Unionist meetings will be held on the second Tuesday of every month. Our next meeting is on February 11th, 2020, and we meet at 6 p.m. at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees William Lucy Building. It's located at 6025 East Burnside in Portland. Our email address is orcbtu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Join us in our evolving adventure representing Black union workers. Any lasting words, Brother Sherman?
No, other than if we continue to kind of think in terms of inclusion and equity, I think we can engage other folks who are not necessarily familiar with the labor movement. And part of this challenge is, again, union density has been reduced over the years for a number of reasons. And we're not teaching social justice mm-hmm. and unionization in our K-12 education system.
Sure.
And so most folks find out about unions once they become employed where there's a collective bargaining sure. agreement. And so as we kind of think in terms of what we want and what we need to create equity and inclusion mm-hmm. and social justice, and that includes workers' rights, I think we'll continue to kind of push and invite more folks in. So push back on those things that create exclusion and invite more folks in to kind of create more inclusion. And that would allow us to kind of look at these issues in a broader perspective.
Okay. Well, once again, thank you, Brother Sherman, for stopping in and helping us out and giving us a twilight tweak on the future to come. And thank you once again for all the work that you have done on behalf of Black workers.
Well. Thank you.
All right. I guess that's it. So, holla.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th, from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library Branch at the Multnomah County Library in Portland. Classical Music Confidential will be hosted by Bruce Charles and will take a look at Portland's secret classical music past of the 1940s. Again, that's Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th,
from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library Branch of the Multnomah County Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
You're listening to Prison Pipeline from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson. I'll be airing audio from an interview I conducted on January 30th, 2020 in Beaverton, Oregon. My guests are Juliet Britton, the presiding judge of Beaverton Municipal Court, Kevin Boone, specialty court coordinator for the City of Beaverton, and Jay Oslander, jail diversion systems coordinator for Washington County. Beaverton is a city in Washington County. The topic of conversation is a new specialty court proposed for the City of Beaverton, a behavioral health court. This conversation follows a presentation made to the Beaverton City Council on January 27, 2020.
My name is Jay Oslander. I am the Jail Diversion Systems Coordinator with Washington County Mental Health and Addictions. And part of my role is to support the courts and the criminal justice system to make sure folks with behavioral health needs have access to services and supports while they're going through the system.
And we're also joined by the presiding judge of the Beaverton